And welcome in, everybody. My name is Dr. Tim Brown. You're listening to Farmcast for the Community, sponsored by the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. This month, we're going to tackle cholesterol, but before I get to it, I want to remind you of what October looks like. We are so fortunate. Dean Kelly Smith of the College of Pharmacy is going to be joining me. We're going to discuss what UGA is doing to provide education to the pharmacists of tomorrow. Now, you may be asking yourself, I'm in the community. I mean, do I really care about what happens educationally for these students? Well, what you should know is pharmacists are probably one of the top healthcare providers that most of the people in the community see on a routine basis, because there's a pharmacy almost every corner. So we want to talk to you about what our students are going through, how they're getting ready to practice, and what a pharmacist actually has to achieve these days to call themselves a doctor of pharmacy. That'll be next month with Dean Kelly Smith on Farmcast for the Community. In the meantime, we still have today talking with Dr. Alex Schnibben, who's joining us from her office, which I love so much. You're coming from your clinical site. I know you're squeezing us in between seeing patients, and I want to thank you for that. Alex, it says here you're the Director of Clinical Quality and Ambulatory Pharmacy Services at Northeast Georgia Physicians Group, correct?
Yes, correct.
That's a big, long title. What the heck does that mean?
So it is a big, long title. It means that I have the honor of working with a lot of fabulous people to take care of our patients. And my team is really focused about population health and keeping our population in the 13 counties we cover healthy and happy and meeting their healthcare goals. So I lead a team. One half of my team does clinical quality, which, for lack of a better word, just means it helps patients close their care gaps. So we're the team that help patients schedule colonoscopies and mammograms and make sure you get your A1C checked and your feet checked and your kidneys checked if you're diabetes, and all of those regular annual things, along with tobacco screening and, you know, just making sure you see your PCP once a year. So that team is medical assistants and registered nurses. But then my other part of my team are another pharmacist and two pharmacy technicians. And the other pharmacist and myself, we focus on direct patient care, seeing patients in clinic, and being an additional member to the healthcare team to help our patients reach their healthcare goals. But my pharmacy tech team, what they do is patient assistance 100% of the time. So here at Northeast Georgia Physicians Group, if a patient cannot afford a medication, we just get a message from that clinic and my techs take it from there and they help patients get their medicines for free. And so far this year, and our fiscal year is from October to September, we've already done over $3 million in free medicines for our patients. And those are mainly those chronic disease states. So diabetes, cholesterol, when we think about the more the newer agents like Repatha and Praluent, and then COPD. So we do our best to be that part of the healthcare team that keeps patients out of the hospital through medication management.
Great. So you work you work with a large number of people then. I mean, physicians, medical assistants, talked about pharmacy technicians. I'm assuming nursing's in there as well. Mm-hmm. And you do all those things. And it sounds like you do a lot of what I call preventive care. Right. So you're trying to keep people out of the hospital by making sure they help reach their goals and stay healthy.
That's exactly it. Ambulatory care pharmacy is what we're called. And that's what we live and breathe. We are an integrated member of that healthcare team. We work directly hand in hand with our physicians, our APPs, so our advanced practice providers, such as physician assistants and nurse practitioners, and then as well as our medical assistants and nursing, all on the same team seeing patients. So they might see their provider and me in one day, or just come see the pharmacist for medication management to help them reach their healthcare goals, because we all know that other members of the healthcare team, such as registered nurses and pharmacists, have a little bit more time to spend with a patient than a provider may. So they might get 15 minutes with a provider, but they'll get 60 minutes with a pharmacist.
You sound like a provider yourself, education. Though.
Like, yeah, I am a provider myself. Right. So patients just come see me just to meet their healthcare goals. My specialty is chronic care management. So if you have a disease state that's uncontrolled, such as diabetes or cholesterol, high blood pressure, the doctor will consult me, pull me in either through a direct handoff and pull me into the patient visit and say, hey, this is Dr. Schnibben. She's going to see you next time in between our visits. And when you come back to me next time, you're going to have a pretty bow on you because she's going to make everything better. And then some of it is just patients word of mouth. They figure out we're there and they add themselves to our schedule. And then the other thing that we use to, you know, find patients to, you know, really impact those that might have the largest healthcare disparities. So things that might be like medication cost or lack of transportation or just really need some extra help is through technology. So we use our medical records to help find those patients, but also our insurances that we partner with are really great at providing patient lists of people that might need that extra bit of education, that extra love to meet their healthcare goals. And we utilize the lists from Medicare and Medicaid and some of those commercial plans that say, hey, can you do a little bit more for this patient? We noticed that they're not filling their medicine on time, or we noticed that their labs are starting to change, or they're at high risk for hospitalization. So we'll pull those patients in to make sure that anything that they might need that they're missing, we can help with. If it's not me, the pharmacist that can do it, then we'll pull on behavioral health specialist or a social worker. I mean, Northeast Georgia Physicians Group, it is fully a patient health, population health model through patient-centered medical home, where we focus on everyone having their own team, which is not just the physician, but pharmacy and nursing and behavioral health specialist and social work, because we want to take care of all their needs in that one visit if we can. And then they might follow up with the with non-physician providers outside of the visits to help them make sure that they're taken care of and to have that extra check. Because we know pharmacists, we have that ability to call somebody several times a week, but the provider doesn't. And that's the key sometimes, just to gain that patient's trust and help them reach their healthcare goals.
Well, and with all that said, I you mentioned something in there that I've been wanting to focus on this month, because many people don't realize that this month is Cholesterol Awareness Month. In other words, what does your cholesterol look like? And you mentioned that you help take care of patients who may have an issue with their cholesterol, whether it be, you talked about telehealth on the phone, coming to see you in the office, working with a physician, those kinds of things. Tell me a little bit about cholesterol management. I think a lot of people don't really know what's good and bad about cholesterol, because we can't feel it. I don't know if my cholesterol is bad or not, because it doesn't make me have a pain. But how do you go through helping people with cholesterol, and who do you normally see that maybe come in the door and you need to sort of interact and help them figure out where they are when it comes to their cholesterol and what their goal may be if they're too high?
So that's a lot of things in one question.
Well, I'm giving you a lot of questions because you give me a lot of answer.
So cholesterol is definitely something that you need to know your numbers. And in order to know your numbers, you need to have a great relationship with a primary care provider. Especially those, you know, 20 years old is when we want to start those screenings for patients to see if they have an issue with their cholesterol, is what we're seeing a lot of credentialing bodies tell us, like the American Heart Association, the United States Preventive Task Force. They're saying that 20 is that age. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, you feel untouchable. But that's the age when you really want to start having that intervention for screening and finding that primary care provider. And screening is definitely where you start, and then, but there are other things that come into it that are risk factors that say, okay, we might need to do it a little bit more frequently, or we might be able to do it every 5 years, but it depends on your family history. So if you have somebody that had a heart attack or a stroke young, so, you know, when we think about young, that's like in your 50s, like a family member did, so mama or daddy is what we're looking at. But if it's been for generations, like all of the granddaddies in your generation always have heart attacks very young, that's going to put you at higher risk. If you're overweight, that's at a higher risk. Or if you eat a lot of junk food. So lifestyle plays a part in that. Family history plays a part in it. If you're a tobacco user, that's another one that's going to put you at a higher risk for any type of heart disease. And, you know, heart disease is not just cholesterol. It also involves blood pressure. And then, you know, all of those things can lead to diabetes if they're uncontrolled, and you can get the trifecta: hypertension, hyperlipidemia, or high cholesterol, and diabetes. And so you can't feel it. And that's what's scary, is it's not like blood pressure where you can get a pain in the back of your head, you have a headache, or you get dizzy if you stand up too quickly. You don't know until it's too late. So how do you know it's too late? Well, unfortunately, that's a heart attack or a stroke.
Can I go back for a second, though? Because you said screening. So I'm assuming that means I have to come in and get, it's blood work, right?
Yes, it is blood work.
And then you said know your numbers. Because before we go into the family history and all that, at 20 years of age, if I'm in seeing my primary care provider, they should at least poke me in the arm and grab some blood and look at my cholesterol every now and then. And then based on my family history, it may be more frequent, but also based on the results of that screening, right? What numbers are you looking at before you determine if somebody needs help or they need to come back, I guess, because of family history?
Yeah. So when we think about the screening aspect of it, it is a blood test and it is something that you want to do fasting. So if you're that person that gets a 1 o'clock appointment, you're probably going to have to come back the next day and do it with no food on your stomach. So that means at least 8 hours that you haven't ate or drank anything. But if you go in the morning and say you've had a cup of black coffee or a cup of water, that's not going to affect your lab results. But you want to go in fasting to that appointment in order for them to take your blood, because that's the only way to really see your full cholesterol numbers. When you've eaten and had your cholesterol taken, we really can only count one number as a valuable test. So you don't want to pay for something if we can't use all the numbers. So a cholesterol screening is one blood test, but it gives us four numbers. It gives us a lot of information. It gives us a total cholesterol, which is a measurement of all your cholesterol. And a total cholesterol is a number we want to be around less than 200. That's your optimal. You know, some people, you know, family history, you're going to sit a little bit higher than 200, and that's going to warrant a more frequent screening. You might have heard something called bad cholesterol or good cholesterol. So bad cholesterol is called something called LDL or low density. And that number is very predictive of you having a heart attack or a stroke. And so we want that number optimally. If you're a healthy person, no other chronic disease states, we want you to be below 130. Now, if you're a person that has a lot of disease states, such as you have blood pressure or diabetes with it, the optimal number is less than 100, 100. Now, there's one more goal. If you're a person that's had a heart attack before and has diagnosed heart disease, and that could be you have some issues with your arteries and they're a little bit clogged, and you may have had a procedure for to clean out your arteries, those people have a goal of less than 70, 70. Now, there's been a lot of conversation about, even though we know the number, it's how do we get a patient there? And I know we're going to talk about treatment in a minute, but we don't focus on using that number to help select treatment. And we'll talk about that, I think, a little bit further in, because we have a little bit, two other numbers to talk about. Another one is called HDL. This is a good cholesterol. And what that means is it protects your heart. The higher the number, the better the number. Now here, gender does play a role. If you're female, we want it, you know, to be above, you know, 40, you know, 40, 50. And if you're a male, we want it, you know, to be above 40. But not everybody gets there because there's a lot of things that play into HDL. And the best thing that will keep that good cholesterol, HDL, high is exercise. We can see that go up greatly. So if you're a person, your doctor's like, oh, your number, other numbers look great, but your HDL is low, we want to act. Because it's going to protect your heart, and exercise is the best thing that you can do there. Now, there's one more number. It's called triglycerides. And triglycerides are really related to sugar in our system. So if they're elevated, it could mean that you are at higher risk for diabetes. It also means that you can increase your risk of inflammation of your pancreas or pancreatitis, which is really extreme belly pain. Or if your triglycerides are high, it could be related to alcoholism, or that you are, you know, went and had some drinks with a friend or family, you had a celebration, you went to your doctor the next day, and that alcohol is still hanging around in your system, because that can falsely elevate triglycerides the day before a fasting test if you drink too much alcohol. But the goal for that is less than 150. Now, we only act on treating triglycerides if they're over 500. That is the only time that we're going to do targeted therapy for triglycerides, because all of our other medications that treat our total cholesterol, our good and our bad cholesterol, will help lower those triglycerides. But they're no match if the triglycerides are over 500. So it's just important that you know your number and know what you can do with that number.
So when knowing the numbers, it sounds like the one that's the most important right now is the LDL. Obviously, the HDL is important, but that LDL guides if we're going to use drugs or therapy. You mentioned a cutoff of 130, 170. How do we know? Let's say I've never had a heart attack. I've never had a stroke, but I'm in my 50s. Is there a way to predict my risk of having any of those things in the future based on what my cholesterol number looks like?
Yeah, there actually is. It's a risk calculator that you can actually find on your own. It's at the American Heart Association. It's called an ASCVD risk calculator. And for lack of a better word, it's just your risk of having an event related to cardiovascular disease. And that can be heart attack. It can be a stroke. It can be changes in how your blood flows, something called peripheral artery disease, where you can't get blood from your feet back to your heart. And so it can tell you, like, what is your risk of those things happening? And that has a number too. There are multiple things that go into that, one of them being your age. At 40 years old is when that screening becomes valid and we can use that number.
Right.
So you've got your age, your sex. It also looks at your blood pressure. So your top number, your systolic, and your bottom number, diastolic. Then it looks at your total cholesterol and your LDL, or your bad cholesterol and your good cholesterol. And it also looks at, do you smoke or not smoke? It looks at, do you have a history of diabetes? Do you currently take an aspirin or not? And then it looks at, I'm forgetting one more component of it, if you're on medication already for cholesterol. And so you can put all that information, it's going to spit out a score. And so that score, it kind of tells you that risk factor of having an event, event related to your heart or a stroke within 10 years. So it's a 10-year risk factor score. And the number that you're looking for is 7.5. If you're less than 7.5, your risk is relatively low. But if you're greater than 7.5, your risk greatly increases. And so you can have a risk in 10, 15, 20, 30, 40%. And the higher you get, the higher the risk. And so that's when you really want to, you know, act on that number too. So we use not only your cholesterol number, we use your age, we use that risk factor score. And then we also use whether you have diabetes or not to really predict, does a patient need to be on medication for cholesterol?
So it's safe to say that most people who come in and get cholesterol screening, we just don't randomly stick them on a medication based on one thing. It's usually a combination of a lot of different things, it sounds like.
It's definitely a combination of a lot of different things. So there's a sweet age, so 40. So 40 is what kind of predicts how we're going to handle things. So if you're below 40, so less than 40, a lot of that's going to be a conversation about what are your other risk factors. So are you smoking? Are you overweight? What happened to your relatives? Did they have heart attacks? Did they have stroke? You know, what's your diet like? So you look at those risk factors. And after you look at those risk factors, the provider will talk with you about being on medication. Usually the ones who will start medication earlier are going to be males, because medications for statins or statin medication, we'll talk about that a little bit more, are something that we want to try to avoid in childbearing age women, so that, you know, 20 to 40. And so a provider might delay the medication for them if the patient's actively getting pregnant or thinking about having children. But recently the FDA came out and said, you know, we still want to take care of women 20 to 40. And, you know, if we put them on the medication, yeah, if they're actively trying to get pregnant, then you stop the medication. We definitely don't want to take it during pregnancy. So there's been a more conversation to make sure that we're protecting women and men, because women are more likely to have, you know, heart-related events, especially white women. So we want to make sure we're taking care of them. So less than 40, a lot more. It's not so quite cut and dry. It's very gray. It's a combination between you and your provider. Do you think you can do diet and exercise? Do you think you can lose weight? And if you do those things and you stick very regimented to a diet, you might get anywhere between a 7 to 30% reduction in your bad cholesterol, your LDL. But when you get over 40, conversations change. There are four groups of patients that we really want to make sure that we are doing our best to try to prevent a heart attack or stroke, because at 40 and up, things kind of change. So the next set of patients is 40 to 75 is what we look at. So if you are 40 to 75 and have had a stroke or heart attack before, or have peripheral vascular disease or artery disease, you're going to be having that conversation about medication, because that's the best thing to do. It's going to cut down on the inflammation. It's going to help the plaques from sticking in the veins. It's going to do its best to try to prevent that from happening.
And it's going to make you live longer, right? I mean,
yeah, it's going to make you live longer, right? Yeah. We're going to try to prevent that event from happening. And so our next set of patients are those that are, you know, 40 and up with diabetes. You know, diabetes is a great risk of causing cardiovascular disease and increasing your cholesterol. Because remember, we said triglycerides are very closely related to sugars in our body, and they go hand in hand. So a lot of patients with diabetes are going to have elevated cholesterol. So usually with diabetes, whether it's type 1 or type 2, at that age of 20, a conversation starts happening about being on a medication to treat cholesterol. The next group is if you had your labs done and your bad cholesterol came back greater than 190, that's really scary. And there's going to be a conversation about medication, because there is no form of diet or exercise that's going to get you down from 190. And that number is that cutoff where you're at a really high risk just based off your lab.
And that's the LDL, right? The LDL 190. Yeah.
And then the last group of people is using that risk factor score. So if you're 40 and up and your risk factor score is greater than 7.5, there's going to be a conversation, because you're at a lot higher risk in the next few 10 years of having that event. And we really want to prevent it. We love our patients. We're not going to just put you on a medicine to check a box, because that is not what we're here to do. We're here to take care of you and give you the best health care possible. And the information we have around statins and the literature and, you know, the benefits of it and preventing a heart attack and stroke are wonderful. I never want my patient to be that person that we say, okay, well, let's treat you after the fact. We always want to go with primary prevention, where we never had an event, and avoid secondary prevention.
Right.
But there are children who we need to think about too. So screening for children usually happens somewhere between age 2 and 11 for cholesterol, because we are seeing overweight as a diagnosis for a lot of our patients that have that BMI greater than the 85th percentile.
You know, no one knows what BMI 85th percentile means, right, Dr. Snubbin?
So
kids that might be a little overweight need to be screened a little bit more frequently, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, yes. So when you look at that growth chart for your child, if your child's in that 80th percentile,
that makes sense.
85th percentile, that is when we're going to say, okay, we need to really make sure we get that screening. But every child is screened between age of 2 and 11. Most patients are going to be screened between the ages of 9 and 11 to really check how the cholesterol is. And we do provide treatment to children too. It's a little bit different process. Pediatricians are going to consult specialists in it, cardiologists, as well as endocrinologists, to have that conversation, just to make sure that your child doesn't have anything underlying. But there's a lot of conversation about treatment there, diet and exercise included. But sometimes medication is needed, because it is a family-based high cholesterol. It may not be related to your lifestyle, but it can be related to genetics. And that is familial hypercholesterolemia, which means that the number is just going to keep climbing as you get older. And that person can have a heart attack very young, in their late teens to early 20s, because their cholesterol is so high because of genetics.
Now, I think you just, you're just throwing out big names now, so people know you're smart. That familial hypercholesterolemia, you know, I'm laughing. Basically, you get high cholesterol from your family. I wanted to circle back.
There's enough genetics involved.
You talked a lot about, you know, gender, you know, males and females and this and that. I think it's important that if you're a transgender patient listening right now, that sometimes your birth sex does play a role in doing the scoring system. So I think as we're teaching our students these days, that when you're talking to patients in general, that gender is playing a role in how we look at things. And we have to be specific about discussing, is it birth gender, identified gender, those kinds of things when we're doing risk factors. But you really brought up some great points about determining the risk of where I would be in the spectrum and what to do. And you even used the word statin in there a couple of times. You know, you gave us a lot of numbers, which are perfect. But to get to those numbers, sometimes you can't eat your way to those numbers. I mean, I'd like to tell you that everybody eats healthy, but we have to go to drugs a lot, right?
So we do have patients that medication, they've tried 6 to 8 weeks of diet and exercise and weight loss, and they haven't seen any change in it. But do you want to go back to the transgender real quick?
Yeah, please.
So transgender population is probably my favorite set of patients. You're brave and you've made that decision to own who you are. But the hormones that you use to help yourself transition, by all means, they get you to where you want to be and you feel comfortable in your own skin. But supplemental estrogen and testosterone can greatly affect your cholesterol. So that's why the screening is very important for you to make sure that you get screened, because especially testosterone can really wreak havoc on your heart. And so it's really important that you get those screenings and that you get the treatment and use your birth gender to kind of help figure out that risk factor. But using the hormones alone is going to increase your risk.
So
it's really important that your provider screens you as well, just to make sure that your heart is protected, because we want you here as long as possible on this earth.
Right. I love talking about different ways that we look at treatment and screening for individuals. It's not like, okay, you're a guy, so you get all this. Well, that's not true. It's for the person sitting in the room with you that it's all different. One of the things you talked about was diet and exercise. So let's say I'm the best patient you've ever had. I, you know, eat correctly. I do this, I do that. Will my LDL, that bad cholesterol, really go down that much just with diet and exercise? Can you get to goal that way? Because I have a lot of people who just don't want to take drugs. How do you explain about diet and exercise? Because it's good. I mean, we don't want people not to do that, right?
So let's have some real talk. So
yeah.
I'm a tiny individual, so you can't see me stand up, but I am a tiny individual. I'm 150 pounds wet. I am 5'2", so I'm a very small person. But you would never guess that my LDL is 180. So, and it's not because, I mean, I eat like a rabbit. My friends and my family and my coworkers love to comment on my indulgence of vegetables all the time. So it can be done. It's really, really hard. I've done it myself. I've gotten my LDL down from 180, 183 was my top end. But all mine's that family cholesterol that I was talking about.
Right.
And I really had to make a lot of changes. My previous employer really penalized us for bad cholesterol for my benefits. And I'm like, well, I'm going to do whatever I can, because at that time, the guidelines would not allow a patient of my age to be treated with any type of, statin medication. And I tried, the red yeast rice and all of those things over the counter, and actually they raised my LDL even more. So I was like, okay, well, let me really try this diet and exercise thing. So I really had to commit. I had to commit to 30 minutes a day of cardio. I had to run. I had to walk. I had to do a dance class or hit whatever I could get at my local YMCA, because that's where my gym was. And then I had to do weight. Like I had to do 5 to 7 days a week. That was
wow.
The only way. And then
that big commitment
in my diet. Yeah. I had to cut out alcohol and cheese. And I love cheese.
Me too.
Alcohol and cheese. And you had to get rid of like your really good meats, like no more beef, no more pork. I had to, what were the other things that I was really sad to let go of?
Sauces. You had to get rid of mayonnaise and
yes, mayonnaise. And like, I love sausage too. Don't bring my heart back.
Me too.
So, and I had to eat a lot of fish, and I don't, it's okay. I'm not a fish person.
So you did all that. And you know, that's what everybody else had to do.
Get there.
Got it.
I got to 130.
So even doing, I mean, I don't want to dissuade people. I want you guys to go out and and live your healthiest life possible. But a lot of times to get to the numbers that Dr. Steven has told us, we have to go to medications. And the class statins, we've discussed a couple of times these answers. Can you give us a few of the drugs that maybe our listeners are familiar with that belong to the statin class of cholesterol-lowering drugs?
Yeah. So I think one of the ones that gets the most information is Crestor. It's the best store. That's kind of like the slogan we have as pharmacists. It's our favorite. Lipitor is another one you might know.
Got it.
Another one you might know is Zocor.
Got it.
And the one that's been on the TV a lot lately is Livalo, because that's one of the newer ones that came out. But those are the brand names. You know it as statin because in their generic names,
got
the word statin. So Crestor is rosuvastatin, which you might see on your prescription bottles now because it is generic, or Lipitor is atorvastatin. So usually if it ends in S-T-A-T-I-N, it is going to be a statin medication for cholesterol.
And it was, now they lower LDL, right? The bad cholesterol.
Yes.
That's their target. How effective
are they? So lowers LDL. It's very effective. So it does lower your total cholesterol. It does a great job at lowering your LDL, depending on which drug, and we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay.
It'll do a slight to moderate increase on your HDL, your good cholesterol, depending on which one. And then it can do anywhere between a 5 to 30% reduction on your triglycerides. What's important to realize is diet and exercise may only get you a 5 to 20% reduction on your LDL, your bad cholesterol.
Got it.
But statin can do anywhere between 30 to greater than a 50% reduction.
Wow.
So if you're sitting up there at 190, you know, a 50% reduction is going to be a hefty reduction in your number, and that's going to greatly provide you a lot more protection. So people get really uncomfortable about statin medications because, you know, you hear a lot of things from your friend down the street and your grandmother had said, and so there's a lot of information circling because people communicate about healthcare, which is great that there are, you've got family that you can bounce ideas off of. And you know, things change. You have to stay up to date with what's out there, and your provider is going to do a really good job about that. But there's a lot of things that have changed about statins, and that landmark year for statins and in my career was 2011. The FDA came out with a major statement about statin medications for cholesterol because there was a lot of rumors going around like, oh, it's going to make my muscles hurt, or it's going to cause diabetes, or it's going to change my memory,
right?
Or it's going to hurt my liver. So there was a lot of things circling around statins. But in 2011, the FDA did a giant review of all the clinical trials, and statins have a lot of information on them because they can prevent so much and treat so much that they're one of those things. If I had to pick two things to put in the water, I'm going to pick statin and I'm going to pick Prozac. I'm like, those are my things. We're going to put them in the water. And in 2011 is when a huge safety statement came out to really try to put it out there that statins are safe. So one of the first thing they discussed was muscle pain. And so a lot of us, you know, we get started on medications for our cholesterol when we're older, we're past 65. Well, a 65-year-old body is going to have aches and pains. And when we're talking about muscle pains associated with statins, we're talking about in your large muscles. We're talking about your biceps. We're talking about your thighs, the front and back of them. And you feel like you've been lifting weights all day long, but you're not a weightlifter. Or you've been pulling weeds and your arms just hurt. And that type of pain is called myopathy or muscle pain. And it is very, 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 can't say enough, varies, rare. Most of the aches and pains that a person experiences with statins is pains that they already have, but it's hard to differentiate. And a lot of times when we stop statin medications to see if the pain goes away, the pain is still the same. It's just underlying condition that the provider needs to help you work through. So muscle pain is very, very, very rare. What's even more rare, like 1 in 3 million, is something called rhabdomyolysis, which is what you might hear a pharmacist say when you pick up your prescription. If you feel your muscles hurt and you're peeing syrup color or Coca-Cola color urine, stop your statin immediately and go to the hospital. That is extremely rare. It's like 1 in 3 million. And it came out then about if your patient experiences muscle pain, you know, we want to stop the medication for 4 weeks. Then we want to try it again. And then if the patient experiences again, then we want to switch to another medication in the statin field, because statins can be water loving and fat loving. So simvastatin is going to be fat loving, which means more likely to cause those muscle pains. But then you've got Crestor or rosuvastatin is going to be more water loving, which means not going to cause the muscle pain. So that's one of the things they came out with 2011 was muscle pains. Very rare, and we just need to really understand more about the pain the patient's reporting before we stop this life-saving medication. The other thing that it came out was saying was people were saying that, you know, cholesterol medicines might increase your risk of diabetes. It's not the cholesterol medicine, it's the fact that you have high cholesterol. And like we said at the beginning, you know, cholesterol loves high blood pressure, which loves diabetes, and vice versa. They all are friends. And you're going to have an increased risk for all three of them once you have one of them. So really taking care of that one first and getting it knocked out and control is going to decrease that risk of developing diabetes. And so it came out in 2011 that, you know, statins don't cause diabetes. It's a very, very slight fluctuation in your blood sugar when you first start them. So from being normal to maybe 5 points higher. So you might sit at 90 and then it's 95. So it's not going to do enough to cause diabetes.
So
the other one that came out. Yeah.
I was going to say, so we talked a little bit about, you know, diabetes, muscle pain, but the other thing about statins though, you said this earlier, many times we do this so we can stop that first heart attack or that first stroke. We don't want them to have it. There's data that statins actually have an impact on that, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there that if a person does earlier treatment, they're going to primarily prevent it, which means not even progress to being a statistic. So let's talk about those statistics. I think this is a good point to kind of stop and really talk about them. And the CDC has really awesome resources around, you know, education and kind of letting you know what's going on in the world around you in the United States. So heart disease, which as we think about is like our heart attacks, is our the leading cause of death in the United States for men, women, and people of all racial and ethnic backgrounds. It doesn't just pick one population and really focus in on it. We're all at risk regardless of gender, race, and ethnicity. One person dies every 36 seconds in the United States from cardiovascular disease. So think about that. We're going to be on here for about an hour. That's a lot of people that are having those events occur. 655,000 Americans die from heart disease every year. So that's 1 in 4 deaths related to heart disease. And that's just heart disease. And we've already said that, you know, statins prevent strokes too. So, you know, strokes are debilitating. If you've ever seen someone with a stroke, it involves the hemispheres of the brain, and it depends what side it is, whether you'll have any disability or whether it's considered a mini stroke or a major stroke. And so the more severe your stroke is, the more likely you are to have a disability, whether it be problems walking, problems talking, problems eating, drinking, going to the restroom, caring for yourself. There's all different degrees related around strokes. And 1 in every 6 deaths that was related to cardiovascular was a stroke. So they're all lumped in there together. And then every 40 seconds, someone experiences a stroke in the United States, and every 4 minutes, someone dies when they have a stroke. So, you know, nearly 1 in 4 people are going to experience a stroke in their life, and that's very scary, and we don't want to be that person on the table, and you only got a certain amount of time from the time your symptoms start to you get that hospital door, that we can make a big intervention to kind of prevent that disability and save your life. So by taking the medication, you're preventing yourself from being a statistic. But what's even more scary is the statistic around high cholesterol. So 93 million U.S. adults, so not any other country, age 20 and older, have a total cholesterol number higher than 200. So remember, 200 was that spot where we say, if you're a bit over that, you know, we need to have a conversation about some changes in our life. And, you know, 7% of our children, 6 to 19, have high cholesterol. And like we said, it has no symptoms until it's too late and you have a heart attack or stroke. And we don't want that to happen. And it increases your risk of, you know, progressing to cardiovascular disease or heart disease. So if you take the medication before an event happens, right when you have high cholesterol, you're less likely to have heart disease, then less likely to have a heart attack or a stroke, therefore extending your life and being there for all those milestones that you want to do. You want to have children. You want to be a grandparent. You want to see your grandchildren get married. Heck, you want to tour the world. I mean, whatever your life goals are, just by taking one medication can really help you get to those goals. But I get it. Some people have you know, side effects from it, and you get scared.
Dr. Sniven, I think the one thing that we take home from all that is the statins. Like, you know, you talk about Crestor, Lipitor, Zocor, Pravacol, Livalo. All of those, if we take them and get screened, we can stop heart attacks and strokes from happening. You talked a little bit about side effects. What happens if I can't use a statin, or let's say I can't use a full dose of a statin because maybe I do get a little achy in my muscles or my liver does not like them, and I'm just one of those people, you know, I get a side effect to a drug. Are there any alternatives I can add to a statin so I kind of get the benefit of the statin, but I lower my cholesterol? You know, I'm asking because I know we've gotten better at this, but the statins remain the golden children when it lowers cholesterol. But what else is out there?
So that you mentioned the liver. So liver injury is very, very rare when it comes to statin too, to where we don't even screen for it anymore. We get your baseline. And then if your provider feels like you're having some symptoms related to it, like yellowing of your skin or eyes, they might screen for liver changes. It's not something we screen anymore because the FDA said that that's no longer needed because the risk is so low. Why cause the patient to have an extra blood test several times a year?
Right, right. But there are some people that have liver disease that maybe a statin is not their choice.
Right.
So, you know, what else can they look at? Yeah. What other classes are out there?
So there's a lot of patients that, you know, we may not use a statin for: pregnant women, people with liver disease, people on dialysis, people who have a history of being statin intolerant, meaning they tried everything under the sun.
Right.
But if you try a statin, like you try one, my recommendation is always going to try at least two more, but you don't have to take it every day. There are plenty of supporting literature out there or clinical trials that say if you take your statin 3 times a week, so Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, you're still going to get that clinical benefit without the side effects. So we want you to be on a statin if you can tolerate it. Even if you're taking it 1 to 3 times a week, you're still going to get that effect from lowering the inflammation risk on your body too. We're even seeing statins be started on people in the hospital with COVID-19 in order to help decrease inflammation and reduce the risk of having a heart attack due to the taxing inflammation on the body. But if you're that patient who can't tolerate it or you have liver disease, we did get better. And so we got a lot better actually. So like I said, we don't treat, you know, triglycerides unless they're greater than 500 because the information we have about, you know, medicines like Tricor and fenofibrate is another one, and niacin, the information is not that good, and they're not that great at their job. But we did get better with cholesterol. You might know of a drug named Zetia, and that one doesn't even focus on any type of muscle pain or anything. It works all in your intestines and really absorbs the cholesterol out of what you eat. So that's another option, Zetia. And that can maximally lower your LDL by 30% max. So remember we said statins can do greater than 50%. So that's 30%. So a little bit of a push, but doesn't have the risk of the muscle pains that a lot of people get confused with when they take with statins. Now, another new class of medication is called, and throw out some letters and some numbers, but you're going to have seen the things on the television. It's called a PCSK9 inhibitor. And what that means is it's just a fancy way of telling your cells to go out in the blood and pull the cholesterol in so it's not circulating, giving you high cholesterol when they check your blood. And those are like Repatha and Praluent.
Got it.
Those are injectable medications. So Zetia and statin is an oral medication. But Praluent and Repatha are injectables. It can be anywhere from every other week. So once every 2 weeks you do an injection, or it can be monthly. And what that medication is going to do is lower your cholesterol a lot. We usually use those patients if they've on the maximally tolerated statin and they're still not reaching their goal, like they need to be less than 70 because they've had a heart attack before, that medicine will get you there.
Got it.
Or if you're a patient who has an LDL greater than 190, they're going to go ahead and put you on a statin and a Repatha or Praluent to push your number down quite quickly, because within 6 weeks, you can go from, you know, a patient over 190 into the 70s. That's how well.
So we're using statins.
Job.
We're using statins with both of these. And then there was isn't there a new one that just came out as well?
There is a new one. It's called Nexletol.
Got it.
And it has its own version by itself. And then there's one with Nexletol and Zetia in a combination tablet. And it's really good at doing its job. It's about a 50% reduction. It is a new class of medication that came out. And what it does is it tells your body to work with enzymes to lower that LDL and pull the bad cholesterol into the cells so it's not hanging around in your bloodstream.
So these all work.
And that's an oral medication.
These all work at different places then. So if you put them together, they kind of gang up on mm-hmm. the cholesterol in different ways. Dr. Snibben, yes. Thank you so much for being here. You've given us so much information. I always ask this of our guests before they get off, though. We've talked about a lot today. If you had to sum up for our listeners three pearls to take with them, three short pearls that they can walk away with from everything we've talked about, what would you say to those listening today?
That's hard. Three things is hard.
Three things.
But my big things are know your numbers, no matter what it is, cholesterol, blood pressure, your blood sugars, know your numbers so you know your risk. Second, see your doctor, see your primary care provider every 6 months to once a year. Get your screenings done because we can catch a lot of things early and there's no need to catch cancer late. There's no need to have a heart attack before you seek medical care. Get that person that you trust to see, you know, every 6 months to once a year. And lastly, give statins a try. They are the gold standard. If done correctly and your provider picks the best one, you won't even know you're taking the medicine, but you will love it when you get your labs back and you're like, gold star, A+, I did it. My numbers were great.
You achieved your number. Yeah, very much.
Yes. And cheer on yourself. I mean, as a person who has high cholesterol and, you know, I fight against it all the time, as soon as I'm done having kiddos, I'm like, sign me up for a statin because I know that they're not enough that I can do with my diet and exercise because of my family history. And every time my labs come back, my doctor's like, this doesn't make any sense. Well, I said, you haven't seen my dad or my grandparents to see that I'm not a normal makeup for my family.
Right. I think if I had to add one to yours, just so I can give you a fourth one, would be if you're already on a statin, don't give up on it and keep taking it. Cause I have a lot of people who want to stop it. Dr. Snibben, thank you so much for being with us today. Your background, not only in the people you care for, but your own personal background and sharing all that with us. That was very, very nice of you. I'm Dr. Tim Brown. I want to say thank you guys for tuning in. It is Cholesterol Awareness Month. Dr. Snibben has given us great tips on how to know our numbers, what drugs to look for, but also how to seek care in general so we can help stay healthy in the future and see those grandkids and enjoy those vacations and live beyond this COVID mess that we're going through. So this is Dr. Tim Brown. Everyone be safe. Tune in next month, October. We're going to talk about how we're preparing the next generation of pharmacists to give you the best care possible. Again, stay safe, stay warm in this hot, hot weather, and try your best to enjoy yourselves and everything that's going on. I appreciate you listening.